Abraham Lincoln once said, "No man is poor who had a godly mother." Our kids need godly mothers and godly fathers. If it was true in Abraham Lincoln's time, it is even more true today. And how are we doing as a nation today? Does our nation have godly mothers that they can learn from? Motherhood in our day has been devastated. It's been mocked, and the institution of marriage has been dismantled, especially recently, with a big push for the gay marriage and the acceptance of that today in our nation. And also, more than 50% of all marriages, as we know, end up in divorce. Parental responsibility is being abandoned at every turn. Most parents don't even want to raise their children. They let society around them do it for them by sending their kids off to daycare or letting the government educate their children all the way from the time they can crawl up to the time they are adults. About 40% of our children are now born into single-parent households. Too many children are being ignored by their parents and just left to grow up on their own, or left for the government to teach them. But what is even worse is that we see mothers actually killing their own children through abortion. On January 22, 1973, the Supreme Court legalized abortion on demand in all 50 states. And as a consequence of that ruling, 58,586,256 children have been killed by abortions since 1973. And of course, that goes up with every passing minute. So what is the state of motherhood in America today? What role can we look to for a godly mother? Who can we look to? The Old Testament contains many roles, or many role models for us today. Men like Noah, Abraham, Joseph, Moses, Joshua, David, and Daniel. And great women like Sarah, Ruth, Esther, and Deborah. But today I want to look at an example of Hannah, a woman, to see the profile of what a godly wife and a godly mother looks like. She was, of course, the mother of Samuel. And Samuel grew up to be one of the most influential leaders in all of Israel's history. And I'm sure that no one was prouder of his accomplishments than his mother. Here is a woman who God used to bring into being a man who was one of the greatest prophets in all of Israel. A man who helped guide the first two kings of Israel. And when it came to mothering, Hannah did good work. Now the first mention of her is in 1 Samuel chapter 1. So if you want to turn to 1 Samuel chapter 1, I'm going to spend the entire message pretty much in the first and second chapters of 1 Samuel is where I'm going to spend most of the message today. Hannah was a childless woman, and she was being made fun of by her rival wife. Her husband had two wives, and her other wife was making fun of her for not having any kids. But then, of course, later she did become a mother, the mother of Samuel, as I said, one of the greatest men who ever walked the earth. The story is during a period of the Judges. There was no king in Israel at the time, and it was a time of turmoil. It was a time when Israel was drifting away from God. Turn over, we can look at Samuel, 1 Samuel chapter 3, verse 3. It says, "The boy Samuel ministered before the Lord Eli. In those days, the word of the Lord was rare. There were not many visions." So the word of God was rare. Apparently not many people were turning towards God at that time period. And apparently even God had nothing to say to them, because it says that the visions, there weren't many visions either. The nation needed a great leader. They needed a great man. And Samuel would become that great leader. And he was not only the product of God's work and of God's handiwork, he was also the product of a godly mother. She gave to her nation and the world the greatest legacy a woman can give, and that is a godly child. Turn back to 1 Samuel chapter 1, verses 1 to 2. And we're going to start off the story of Hannah and Samuel here to learn a few lessons. 1 Samuel chapter 1, verses 1 to 2. There was a certain man, and I might mess up these names and places, but there was a certain man, a Ramathean, Zophim, of the mountains of Ephraim, and his name was Elkanah, the son of Jeroham. And he was the son of Elihu, the son of Tohu, and the son of Zoph, an Ephraimite. And he had two wives. The name of one was Hannah, and the other was Peninnah. And Peninnah had children, but Hannah course, had no children. So Hannah was married to Elkanah, and there was another wife, of course, her name was Peninnah. Peninnah had children, but of course, Hannah was barren. But as we know, eventually she would conceive and have Samuel. But what was it that made her such a good mother? How did she raise a child like Samuel? Now, I would like to suggest that there are eight things that I came up with that we can see from this story that Hannah did to become the godly mother that she was. There are eight characteristics of a godly mother that we can learn from the story of Hannah. The first characteristic that I came up with is that she endured real problems. Hannah had real problems she had to deal with, just like all of us do. She didn't live a carefree life where everything was roses. She had real problems, just like everyone else in the world today does. 1 Samuel chapter 1, verses 1 to 5. I'm going to read this again to give more background. There was a certain man from, again, Ramathaim, a Zuphite, from the hill country of Ephraim, whose name was Elkanah, the son of Jeroham, the son of Elihu, and the son of Tohu, and the son of Zoph, an Ephraimite. He had two wives. One was called Hannah, and another Peninnah. Peninnah had children, but Hannah had none. Verse 3. Year after year, this man went up from his town to worship and to sacrifice the Lord Almighty at Shiloh, where Hophni and Phinehas, the two sons of Eli, were the priests of the Lord. Whenever the day came for Elkanah's sacrifice, he would give portions of the meat to his wife Peninnah and to all his sons and daughters. But to Hannah, he gave double portion because he loved her, and the Lord had closed her womb. So Hannah could not have children. It was something that was a real trial in her life. It was something that bothered her greatly. It was a big trial in her life. Because even more than today, back in those days, having children was one of the most important things that a woman could do, because it was like a gift to her husband to carry on the family name to the next generation. It was something that really upset her. She was also provoked by Elkanah's wife, Peninnah. Peninnah would provoke her because she had children and she didn't. If you want to drop down to verse 6 to 8 now. Because the Lord had closed Hannah's womb, her rival kept provoking her in order to irritate him. It wasn't a very nice thing to do. This went on year after year. Whenever Hannah went up to the house of the Lord, her rival provoked her till she wept and would not eat. Her husband Elkanah would say to her, Hannah, why are you weeping? Why don't you eat? Why are you downhearted? Don't I mean more to you than 10 sons? So the first thing we can learn from Hannah is that women of faith have problems in their lives. Real problems. Hannah did, and all of us do as well. Hannah could have used her misfortune and mistreatment as an excuse. But it says here, year after year, she continued to worship God. In 1 Samuel 1 verse 7, it says, this went on from year to year. So this went on for years. Whenever Hannah went up to the house of the Lord, her rival provoked her till she wept and could not eat. So she was tormented for years with this. Women of faith have problems just like other women. What distinguishes them as women of faith is what they do and how they handle these problems. What they do with these problems that they're faced with. And we will see what Hannah did here in just a few minutes as we go through this. The second characteristic of a godly mother we see from Hannah is her devotion to her husband. She was completely devoted to her husband, and that's an important characteristic of a godly mother and wife. She had a very good relationship with her husband. The most important relationship in a family, in raising godly children, is not the relationship between the parents and the children. It's the relationship between the mother and the father. Because they will learn about human relationships from their parents. They will learn about life in general from the relationship that their parents have together. They will learn about virtue. They will learn about sin. They will learn about love. They will learn about forgiveness. They will learn about respect. And they will learn about honesty and integrity by watching their parents. So the relationship between the husband and wife is more important in the long run than even the relationship between the mother and the child or the father and the child. In the long run, the relationship you have with your spouse is far more important than the relationship to your child. And we can see that relationship that Hannah had with her husband in these verses. Now, of course, it was not a perfect relationship. No marriage ever is. Nobody is married to a perfect man. And of course, Hannah was married to a polygamist. Now, you think about that in today's terms, it's far from perfect. It's not, of course, what we would want. And it's, of course, not what God really wanted either, because he made it pretty clear that it's to be one man and one woman joined together in one flesh. But back in that day, polygamy was, you know, part of the culture. And that's what it was. So he was not a perfect man. But Hannah still had a good relationship with him. Let's take a look at 1 Samuel 1, verse 3. Let's take a look at what kind of relationship they had. Now, of course, we don't see the whole story here, but we can get little tidbits of the kind of relationship they had in Samuel 1, verse 3. This man went up from the city yearly to worship and to sacrifice to the Lord of hosts in Shiloh. Also the sons of Eli, Hophniah and Phinehas, the priests of the Lord, were there. And then in verse 7, it says that Hannah went up to worship God as well, with him. She always traveled with him to worship. In chapter 1, verse 7. So it was year by year she went up to the house of the Lord, that she provoked her, for therefore she wept and did not eat. So we can figure out here that they worshiped together. The man had to go to the place of worship in this particular time. And in 1 Samuel here at this time, the place of worship was Shiloh, because that's where the Ark of Covenant was at that time. Elkanah was a worshiping man. He was a man who believed in God, a man who worshiped God. She had a believing husband, and they worshiped together. And that's an important part of raising godly children, to worship together as man and wife, because they see that as an example. You young ladies here today, there's a few young ladies here today, when you get married, marry someone who fears and worships God. It will be vitally important when raising your children, because you need that spiritual leadership in a family, and that's what Hannah had in Elkanah. In spite of the difficulty of the polygamous relationship, she had a godly husband who was a spiritual leader in their family. Parents need to worship together because it shows unity. It shows unity in worship, worshiping God to their children. In Deuteronomy 7, you don't need to turn there if you don't want to. You can stay. We're going to come right back. But in Deuteronomy 7, it says something about marrying, you know, people from other nations and the problems it can cause. So I'm just going to read it here. Deuteronomy 7, verses 1 to 7. Something we're probably familiar with. It says, when the Lord your God brings you into the land which you go to possess, and you cast out many nations before you, the Hittites and the Gergesites and the Amorites and the Canaanites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, seven nations greater and mightier than you. And when the Lord your God delivers them over to you, you shall conquer them and utterly destroy them. You shall make no covenant with them, nor show any mercy to them. Nor shall you make marriages with them. You shall not give your daughter to their son, nor take their daughter for your son. For they will turn your sons away from following me to serve other gods. So the anger of the Lord will be aroused against you and destroy you suddenly. So it's a warning here that we should not have our sons and daughters running after and marrying people who are unbelievers, that don't believe in God, because it will turn your sons away from God to follow other gods, as it says. And I think that's a warning that our young men here and young women here need to take heed of and take mind of. 2 Corinthians 6, verse 14 says something very similar. Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers, for what fellowship is righteousness with lawlessness? What communion has light with darkness? Now, of course, God can make it work when believers marry unbelievers. It happens many times. But it's just not the ideal situation. It's not ideally what God wants. God wants the believer to marry the believer for the sake of the next generation. And that's pretty much what he says there in those verses. That it's for the sake of the next generation that we should marry and worship together. How you worship communicates volumes of information to your children. Are you faithful? Are you faithful to come and meet with God's people every week? Are you faithful to make God, the Word of God, the priority in your life? But not only did they have a right relationship in their marriage because of worshiping together, but you can see that they also loved and cared for one another. 1 Samuel, if you're still there, it's 1 Samuel chapter 1, verses 4 and 5. We can see the kind of loving relationship that they had. 1 Samuel 1, verses 4 to 5. Says, and whenever the time of Elkanah came to an offering, he would give portions to Peninnah his wife and to all his sons and daughters. But to Hannah he would give double portion, for he loved her. Hannah, although the Lord had closed her womb. Peninnah was there probably primarily to have children for Elkanah. But Hannah was the one that he loved, and he didn't try to hide it from anyone. He would give double portion to Hannah because she was the one that he loved, it said. She was the one who had his heart. Now let's keep reading here, verse 6 now. And her rival also provoked her severely to make her miserable because the Lord had closed her womb. So it was year after year they went up to the house of the Lord that she provoked her. Therefore she wept and did not eat. So again, this went on for year after year. Then verse 8. Then Elkanah her husband said to her, Hannah, why do you weep? Why do you not eat? And why is your heart grieved? Am I not better than 10 sons for you? Hannah couldn't have any children. And of course, Peninnah would harass her year after year about it, sticking a knife in her side and twisting it year after year. So here she is. She goes up to this big feast. And Elkanah, we can see, is very sympathetic to her. And lovingly, he gives her a double portion. But of course, she won't eat anything. She won't eat anything because on the other side of the table is Peninnah, who is rubbing it in that she had no children. Then Elkanah said to her, Hannah, why do you weep? Why do you not eat? Why is your heart sad? Am I not better than 10 sons? So you can see her husband tries to console her. He feels her pain. He's compassionate towards her. He cares about her. So we can see that she had a right relationship with her husband. They shared in worship. They shared in their love and they shared in their compassion. So the third characteristic of a godly mother we can see from the story of Hannah is that she also had a right relationship with God. This was something that she shared with her husband, as we just went over. Hannah and Elkanah not only loved each other, they also loved God. And this was clearly seen in their actions. They would worship together, as we saw back in verse 3. But we can also see in First Samuel chapter 2 verse 19, that they continued to worship. Even after Samuel was born, even after he was given over to Eli, they continued to worship together. 1 Samuel 2 verse 19. Moreover, his woman used to make him a little robe and bring it to him year after year when she came up with her husband to offer the yearly sacrifice. So they continued to worship together year after year. Hannah had a right relationship with God. When she had a problem, she knew where to go with her problem. She wanted a child so much that she wept and wouldn't eat, and she prayed earnestly and fervently. Hannah's dedication to God could be seen in her prayer life. She prayed for a son, and when God answered, she responded with a prayer of thanksgiving, and we'll see that here in a few minutes, which is found in chapter 2. So the fourth characteristic of a godly mother that we can see from Hannah is that she prayed passionately. She prayed passionate prayers. That was a fourth characteristic of a godly mother. Hannah knew where to go when she was going through her trials and her anguish. She knew where to turn. 1 Samuel 1, verses 10 to 13. Says, in her deep anguish, Hannah prayed to the Lord, weeping bitterly. So she was really upset. And she made a vow, saying, Lord Almighty, if you will only look on your servant's misery and remember me and not forget your servant, but give her a son, I will give him to you, Lord, for all the days of his life, and no razor will be ever used on his head. As she kept on praying to the Lord, Eli observed her mouth. Hannah was praying in her heart, and her lips were moving, but her voice was not heard. So Eli thought that she was drunk. Of course, she wasn't drunk. She was just praying silently and moving her lips. She prayed with weeping and with anguish, it says. And she prayed offering a vow. She actually vowed a vow to God. She prayed with persistence. She prayed with her heart. And of course, she prayed with faith that God would hear her. She knew where to go in times of trouble. Hannah knew in times of trouble where to turn. She was a woman of prayer. So the fifth characteristic of a godly mother we see from Hannah is that Hannah trusted in what God would give her. No matter what it was, she trusted that God would give her what was best for her. 1 Samuel 1:19-20. Then they rose early in the morning and worshiped before the Lord and returned and came to the house of Ramah. And Elkanah knew Hannah, his wife, and the Lord remembered her. So it came to pass in the process of time that Hannah conceived and bore a son, and called his name Samuel, a saying that means because I have asked for him from the Lord. So Hannah had trust that God would answer her prayer. 1 John 5:14, you don't have to turn there. It says, "Now this is the confidence that we have in him, that if we ask anything according to his will, he hears it." God will give us what we need. Now it may not be what we expect, or it may not be in the time that we expect, but he knows what our needs are, and he knows what is best for us. He will meet our needs according to his will. And sometimes, of course, we don't know what his will is, and it may not be our will, but it will be according to his will. So the sixth characteristic of a godly mother we see from Hannah is that she keeps her promises. She kept her promise. She made a vow, as I just mentioned. And when God answered her prayer, she kept her vow. 1 Samuel 1, verses 22 to 28. Verses 22 to 28 says, "But Hannah did not go up, for she said to her husband, 'Not until the child is weaned. Then I will take him, and they will appear before the Lord and remain there forever.'" She was talking about after Samuel was born, taking him up to Eli, the priest. "So Elkanah, her husband, said to her, 'Do what seems best to you. Wait until you have weaned him. Only let the Lord establish his word.' Then the woman stayed and nursed her son until she had weaned him. Now when she had weaned him, she took him up with her and three bulls and one ephah of flour and a skin of wine and brought him to the house of the Lord in Shiloh, and the child was young. Then they slaughtered a bull and brought the child to Eli. And she said, 'O my Lord, as your soul lives, my Lord, I am the woman who stood by you here praying to the Lord. For this child I prayed, and the Lord has granted me the petition which I have asked of him. Therefore I also have lent him to the Lord. As long as he lives, he shall be lent to the Lord.' So they worshipped the Lord there." So she planned to keep her promise. When she prayed that vow to God, she knew she would keep the promise. And she did. She carried it out. And she turned Samuel over to God when he was just very young. I'm not sure how old, but maybe 3 years old, something like that. It was after he was weaned. A young boy. Ecclesiastes 5, verses 4 to 5. Again, you'll need to turn there because I'll be coming back again. It says, "When you make a vow to God, do not delay to repay it, for it has no pleasure in fools. Pay what you have vowed. It is better not to vow than to vow and not repay." So God has no pleasure in fools who do not keep their vows. 1 Samuel 1, verse 11, I'm going to read again about the vow she made. "Then she made a vow and said, 'O Lord of hosts, if you indeed look upon the affliction of your maidservant and remember me and not forget your maidservant, but will give your maidservant a male child, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and no razor shall come upon his head.'" So she not only vowed to give her son over to God for the days of his life, she also gave, I was talking about the Nazarite vow with the razor on his head. So she made a vow and she made a promise. "If you give me a son, I will dedicate his life to you. And if you give him to me, I will give him back to you." Now, this is the essence of a godly mother. To dedicate her child to serving God, back to serving God. So what have we learned about this woman so far? Godly mother so far. First, she endured real problems, and all of us endure problems as well. Second, she was devoted to her husband. Third, she had a right relationship with God. Fourth, she praised passionate prayers. Fifth, she trusted in what God would give her. Sixth, she keeps her promises. And now the seventh characteristic of a godly mother that we can see from Hannah is that she was a woman of great faith. She had great faith, and she was a woman of great faith. She was a woman who knows God on a personal level. In her prayer, you can see she had a personal relationship with God. She didn't just know about him, you know, that there's a God out there somewhere, know about this spiritual being. She had a personal relationship with him. She knew him and trusted him for all of her needs. She turned to him when things weren't going well or when she had problems in her life. She turned to him and trusted him to make the impossible things for her possible. She didn't just talk about faith in God. She showed it by how she lived. More than anything in the world, Hannah wanted a son. And she knew this would be impossible without God's help. So she had faith in God for the impossible and promised to give Samuel back to him in return. Right after she was weeping and praying so hard to give her a son, we can clearly see her faith in verse 18, if you want to notice verse 18 in 1 Samuel chapter 1. Because we can see her faith here, loud and clear. Verse 18, it says, "And she said, let the maidservant find favor in your sight. So the woman went away to eat, and her face was no longer sad." She could eat now. She was no longer sad, it says. She went away to eat, and she was no longer sad. If you remember before, she was so upset before she prayed that she couldn't even eat. She didn't want to eat, and she was, of course, very sad, and she wept bitterly. But after this prayer, it says she could now eat, and she was no longer sad. So you ask yourself, why? Why was she no longer sad? Why could she now eat? It was because she had faith. It was because of her great faith. She gave over her problem to God, and she had faith that he would take care of it. There was no more doubt in her mind. God would take care of it. She says, "Here it is, God. Here's my problem." And then she walks away and is no longer sad. Hannah had faith that God would work it out. This is a characteristic of a godly mother, one who totally trusts God. She casts her burden on God. And then that's the end of it. She can walk away. She can now eat, and she is no longer sad. The eighth and last characteristic I have here of a godly mother that we can see from Hannah is that she praised God continually. She praised God continually. If you want to turn over to First Samuel chapter 2 now, we see Hannah praying again. But this time, it's not a prayer of weeping and bitterness. This time, it's a prayer of praise and happiness. I'm just going to read it. It's kind of long, all the way to verse 10. But we can see that she praised God continually, especially in her prayer. 1 Samuel 2, verses 1 to 10. "And Hannah prayed and said, 'My heart rejoices in the Lord. My horn is exalted in the Lord. I smile at my enemies because I rejoice in your salvation. No one is holy like the Lord, for there is none besides you, nor is there any rock like you, O God. Take no more so very proudly. Let no arrogance come from your mouth. For the Lord is the God of knowledge, and by him actions are weighed. The bowels of the mighty men are broken, and those who stumble are girded with strength. Those who are full have hired themselves out for bread, and the hungry have ceased to hunger. Even the barren has borne seven, and she who has many children has become feeble. The Lord kills and makes alive. He brings down to the grave and brings up. The Lord makes poor the rich and brings low and lifts up. He raises the poor from the dust. He lifts the beggar from the ash heap and set among them princes and make them inherit the throne of glory. For the pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and he has set the world upon them. He will guard the feet of his saints, and the wicked shall be silent in darkness. For by strength no man shall prevail. The adversaries of the Lord shall be broken to pieces from heaven. He will thunder against them, and the Lord will judge the ends of the earth. He will give strength to his king and exalt the horn of his anointed.'" Hannah praised God for answering her prayer. And she praised him continually in her prayers. She says God is her rock in verse 2. She says, "No one is holy like God, for there is none beside you, nor is there any rock like our God." Now we know in the New Testament, Jesus Christ told the story of two men who built their homes, one upon sand and the other upon a rock. The storm came and destroyed the one that was on the sand. But the house that was built on the rock, of course, stood strong. Hannah built her life on a rock. She knew where the foundation was. And that's where she turned to in time of need. Hannah praised God continually in her prayer. Praising God is how a Christian offers prayers or offers spiritual sacrifices to God. Don't turn there, but Hebrews 13:15 says, "Therefore by him let us consider offer the sacrifice of praise to God. That is the fruit of our lips, giving thanks to his name." So we are to do the very same thing. So she is not only a woman that endured real problems. She was devoted to her husband. She had a right relationship with God. She prayed passionate prayers. She trusted in what God would give her. She kept her promises. She was a woman of great faith, but she was also a woman who praised God continually. And she was a woman of a thankful heart. When God did give her a child, she expressed her thanksgiving and praise, and it came from the heart. A godly mother is known by her praise for God. 1 Samuel 1, verse 20, again says, "So it came to pass in the process of time that Hannah conceived and bore a son, and he called his name Samuel, a saying that means, because I have asked for him from the Lord." And then I'm going to drop down to verse 24. "Now when she had weaned him, she took him up with her, the three bulls, and one ephah of flour, and a skin of wine, and brought him to the house of the Lord of Shiloh, and the child was young. And then they slaughtered a bull, and they brought the child to Eli. And she said, 'Oh my Lord, as your soul lives, my Lord, I am the woman who stood here and prayed to the Lord. For this child I have prayed, and the Lord has granted me the petition which I have asked of him. Therefore I have also lent him to the Lord. As long as he shall live, I have lent him to the Lord.' So they worshiped the Lord there." She didn't want to give her son a great career, a great job somewhere out there in the world. She didn't care if he had a big job and became famous or made a lot of money that she could brag about, you know, her son is this guy or that guy. He's in charge of this company or that company. He makes all this kind of money. He's a king of this or that. She didn't care about any of that. She didn't want him to be in a situation where he could make a lot of money and maybe take care of her in her old age. That's not where her focus was. But instead, she gave her son to be dedicated to serving God. That was her focus. And her mothering continued, of course, as Samuel grew up. I read part of this already, but I'm going to read it again. In chapter 2, verses 18 and 21. "But Samuel ministered before the Lord, even as a child, wearing a linen ephod. Moreover, his mother used to make him a little robe. So every year she made him a little robe, to bring it to him year by year, and when she came up with her husband to offer the yearly sacrifice. Even Eli, and Eli would bless Elkanah and his wife and say, 'The Lord gave you descendants from this woman for the loan that was given to the Lord.' Then they would go to their own home, and the Lord visited Hannah, so that she conceived and bore three sons and two daughters. Meanwhile, the child Samuel grew before the Lord." She never really let go of her responsibility. Every time she came to worship, she came and brought Samuel that little robe from year to year. All of us want our kids to grow up to be happy and fulfilled individuals. We all want the best for our children. In fact, we're willing to sacrifice whatever it takes that they will have it. We want to give them the best homes, the best clothes, take them on the best vacations and the best trips. We want them to have the best education so they can get the best jobs possible. But if we were to give them all this, but we neglect to guide them into a right relationship with God, then we have really given them nothing. Nothing at all. That is what the story of Hannah should teach us. That's what her story should teach us about being a godly mother or a godly parent. In conclusion, Hannah teaches us 8 lessons about being a godly mother. First, she endured real problems. She was devoted to her husband. Third, she had a right relationship with God. Fourth, she prayed passionate prayers. Fifth, she trusted in what God would give her. Sixth, she kept her promises. Seventh, she was a woman of great faith. And eighth, she praised God continually. Essentially, all 8 of these can be boiled down to just 2. 1, she had a right relationship with God, or with her husband. And 2, she had a right relationship with God. All those 8 can be kind of boiled down to those 2 concepts. So what does this have to do with parenting? All of this. What does this have to do with parenting? Well, I would say it has everything to do with our parenting. Because the quality of our relationship with your spouse and your relationship with God will influence your child's spiritual development more than anything else. Our kids are watching. They are looking to see if God is real in our lives. Paul Harvey once said, you probably remember Paul Harvey, he's dead a few years, but he once said, "If you don't live it, you won't. If you don't live it, you don't believe it." That's one of the things he said. But there's another statement that's even more true. If you don't live it, then your children won't believe it either. I think that's something we need to keep in mind. And of course, Hannah, as we saw, lived it. Her life proved that she did live it. Hannah's story can show us what a godly woman and mother looks like. And to the men out here today, half of us are men, to the men out here today, I would ask that you create an environment so that your wife can have that right relationship with you, and of course that relationship with God. And that you raise your sons and daughters who will be godly parents someday themselves, so that they can look out for the next generation and it can continue on. And to you young men out there, there are some young men out there, some three young men that I know very well, I ask that you look, when you're out there looking for a young lady to marry, that you look for these characteristics that I just mentioned today. Look for these characteristics in the young ladies that you like to talk to, that you may want to someday date and marry. And also to you young people, all of you, I ask you this question. Are you honoring your mother? Are you obeying your mother? Because if God has given you a godly mother, God has given you one of the best gifts that you could ever have. And it's not something you should take lightly. The nation needed a great leader and a great man back in the time of Hannah. And Samuel was one of the greatest men who have ever walked the earth. And he was not only the product of the work of God, he was a product of a godly mother. She gave to her nation and the world the greatest legacy a woman can give, and that is to raise a godly child. There was a poem that was written a few years ago, I don't know, it's probably been decades ago, by a man named John Stiles. And I'm just going to close the sermon today by reading this poem. It goes like this. I've worshipped in churches and chapels. I have prayed in the busy street. I have sought my God and have found him where the waves of his ocean beat. I have knelt in the silent forest in the shade of some ancient tree. But the dearest of all my altars was at my mother's knee. I have listened to God in his temple. I have caught his voice in the crowd. I have heard him speak with the breakers and booming long and loud. Where the winds play soft in treetops, my God has talked to me. But I have never heard him clear than at my mother's knee. The things in my life that are worthy were born in my mother's breast and breathed into mine my wonder of the love her life expressed. The years that have brought me to manhood have taken her far from me, but memory keeps me from straying too far from my mother's knee. God, make me the man of vision and purge me of selfishness. God, keep me true to my standards and help me to live to bless. God, hallow the holy impress of the days that used to be and keep me a pilgrim forever to the shrine of my mother's knee.